we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We want to answer your questions today. We had some great questions given, or rather sent in, and some themes emerged. And we want to cover today just even talking about meeting each other's needs and desires when one is physical and one is emotional. Wonder whose is physical, wonder whose is emotional. I already know the answer to that one. We want to talk about overstimulation from your kids. What do you do with whining and being overstimulated yourself and with littles? That's a big one. What do you do when you want to shield your kids from emotional pain, right? Like, what do we do with all that? So we're going to cover some of those themes and some of those questions today. And also want to say thank you to everybody who's rated, subscribed, and also left a comment wherever you listen to this. That is so helpful. So wherever you ingest this content, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe. We release stuff every week and we actually have some more content there. So go over to YouTube if you haven't. Links in the show notes. But we're going to respond to some of your questions today. And I'm excited about that because these are always, I love spontaneity. So that's why I love these conversations, because I just don't know where they're going to go. So where did you want to start? You wanted to start with the being present with the toddler or the overstimulation? Which one did you want to?
The being present one.
Okay. Yeah. So being present with my toddler while managing the home, as they have meltdowns very easily. We've never had any of this. We've never experienced any of this. We still experience it. Yeah. Why don't you start, honey?
Yeah. Well, I think it's such a wrestle for any parent, whether you're a stay-at-home parent or a working parent, whether you're a mom or a dad. I think the wrestle looks a little bit different for each of those scenarios, but the root is probably the same, of feeling like oftentimes the emotional connection and those types of needs with my kids are pitted against the needs to just make life go, to run a home, to earn money, to take care of myself, to like, they feel so often at odds with each other. And it feels like the needs of life are so easy to take precedent because they have to keep moving forward every day, can so easily take precedent over the needs of my kids, or the opposite. Maybe you're really good at being emotionally present, sitting and having conversations, connecting, that's like where your strength lies. But like, you can't figure out how in the world do I still feed everybody? And like, that part of your life is hard to manage and feels overwhelming. And I think you know, you know, hearing that, which end of the spectrum mm-hmm. you more naturally gravitate towards. I more naturally always gravitate towards task mm-hmm. first. And especially when there's a lot that needs to be done, it's really hard for me mm-hmm. to be present. And
tell me more. I didn't know.
So obviously there's so much we you could talk about here, but yeah. I feel like it's important to say, we were talking before we recorded, and I would love us to do like a more extensive episode mm-hmm. on this and maybe get a few experts in. But I think a lot of the pressure that we feel right now, especially moms, but I think it trickles down to dads, even if they maybe couldn't name it as much, or maybe they're not reading and researching about it as much. But there's a lot of misinformation in the world of attachment and what that means. Or maybe because we live in the world of clips and just, you know, seeing like the short version of something, we've developed often a misunderstanding of what it means to actually have secure attachment. And I think the enemy is using it right now with mm-hmm. really good-hearted parents yeah. to lead them to believe with the little fragments of information that they have that secure attachment, which is what I want my kid to be securely attached in their relationships and with me. So that means I have to meet their every need all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's not actually what creates secure attachment. And it doesn't mean that you have to be on the ground playing with your toddler at all times, coming to them mm-hmm. every time they cry, being readily available to them and never missing that availability. It's not what it means. What actually it's to not spend the whole episode talking about it or to do any sort of deep dive. It's a continued pattern of relating. It's not an mm-hmm. every single time. It's a, when my child is in distress, it's more about mm-hmm. distress and when they have an emotional need than just them having a physical need or a yeah. desire.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. But an actual need, a need to be comforted and to be soothed and to be mm-hmm. safe, soothed, secure, and seen. Mm-hmm. So meeting the need when there's a need for safety, meeting the need when we do actually need to reassure, not an overly reassuring, but that reassuring presence. Mm-hmm. It's giving them boundaries. It's showing up when they actually have an emotional need that they just need somebody to see them. Mm-hmm. I see that you're upset. I see that you just need connection right now. Yeah. It's a continued pattern of relating, like that you are maybe more often than you're missing it, you are able to meet those needs. But the most important thing about attachment is what we do when we miss it. The idea of rupture and repair. We will have ruptures. We will have them all the time. And there's so much, if you love the work of Kurt Thompson, his the Being Known podcast, their current season right now is all on rupture and repair. And it's blowing my mind because he's giving this unbelievable biblical framework for rupture. Mm-hmm. And where is God in that? And mm-hmm. does God actually cause rupture and then create repairs? Anyway, it's well worth your time. But really what we have to be aware of is that the attachment, the secure attachment is coming out of when we have a rupture and we learn how to make the repair. Yeah. So meaning when we miss the moment, when they do have an emotional need and we're not there for it, or we're too dysregulated to be able to be regulated for them and to meet their emotional needs, or when we respond poorly and we miss what they're actually needing, when we can go back and make the repair. Say, man, I want to know what's in your heart. I responded to how you were speaking to me and I missed you completely. Yeah. Tell me what was it you were feeling? Yeah. You know, obviously that's going to look different with a toddler. It's not conversation like that. Scooping them up. I love you so much. And mm-hmm. I know that I get busy, but it doesn't mean I don't love you and love spending time with you, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. But I think if we don't understand some of that framework, then we feel so much guilt that we're not always there, always yeah. doing enough, always yeah. meeting their every need. Right. And it's first of all, not humanly possible. And it's not actually what they need. And it's not actually what God does for us all the time. God yeah. is not following us around, reassuring our every bit of anxiety, mm-hmm. telling us everything, keeping our world so perfect that we never yeah. feel distress.
Yeah.
He's a God who knows we will feel distressed and promises that when we call out to him, he will always be there for us. But he's not protecting us from anything that would cause us to feel distressed. Yeah. He never promises that we won't feel distress. He promises the opposite.
Yeah. I was going to say, Phil, I see, you know, even as Elizabeth's laying the groundwork for this idea to respond to this question, I see you flipping through the scriptures. I'd wonder, what are you thinking over there? I'm curious.
Well, I always think, okay, where is what we're talking about illustrated in the scripture?
Yeah.
And so I'm not a mother, so what this is totally really important, everything you're saying. But the original question was, how can I do what I have to get done?
Yes.
And be present. And so I just thought of Jesus. Okay, he had a job to do. He had a mission. And I had to search to find it. But let me, in Luke 8, it says that Jesus began going about from one city and village to another, proclaiming and preaching the kingdom of God. That was his job. And the 12 were with him. And I think that whenever you can just bring your kids along in whatever your daily work is, that's important. And when kids are little, like I'm thinking of our daughter, Rebecca, who Ellis likes to clean stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he saw her cleaning. So she bought him a little kids, gave him a bucket and a thing. So, okay, we're going to clean now. Now, of course, every mom knows that they're going to make more of a mess for you, but you're actually... And so, like, I love doing errands. I love taking Scarlett with me. You know, Duke hates errands, but Scarlett loved going on errands with me. Mm-hmm. Well, I did need to go here. I need to go to the grocery store. So let's come along. So I just think we're raising disciples. And in chapter 8 here, the 12 were with him. In the next chapter, he sent them out. Eventually, you're going to send your kids out. So I just think as you're doing your daily work, Jesus could have said, I don't have time for you guys. Mm-hmm. I have a job to do. I got to preach the gospel. But he brought them along. In fact, all of his teaching was come with me as I do life. So I think that's what we're trying to figure out there. How do you do that with a 2-year-old?
Yes.
That's where you and Diane can speak to that. But I just think the big picture is that's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. We're actually teaching them, you know, when you're washing a window and you let them help you wash the window. I mean, whatever. And you're reading your Bible and you quote a verse to them. I mean, you're bringing them along. So anyway, that I don't know. That's my...
A friend of mine had just put something on Instagram. She has a toddler and then she's reoccurringly posting about it. And I love it. I wish I'd like had this framework when my kids were really little. She was talking about how she doesn't want her toddler to, there's so many things that she's saying no to because it's inconvenient. And so she started asking herself, is it harmful or is it just inconvenient?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so she just keeps posting these moments of, is it harmful? Is it inconvenient? And she's showing the very inconvenient, him helping with things.
Yes.
Yeah. Or like doing a sensory activity that's making a disaster. Yeah. And I think that's really good framework to what you're saying of like, when there are times when we can take them along with us.
Yes.
Is it harmful or is it just inconvenient to take them along with me?
Yeah.
I think that's super important. And then on the other side of that, the stuff that I said of like, there are times when, and I think, Mom, the next question kind of bodes well with this of when it's also okay to for them to learn to have to play on their own.
Absolutely.
Because you need to do something. That's also okay.
Not only play on them, they have to learn that even if a parent leaves, they're coming back. Like Brooke is traveling a lot. You know, we both are traveling right now, but you're going to be gone a lot. But the kids already know Dad will come back. And so it's dad, does
unless
Brooke
I die,
have,
and then does, I told that.
Does Brooke have to say, I'm sorry, I can never leave this house. I can never go speak anywhere because I have to always be here with you.
Sure.
So you're teaching them even that there's work, there's a calling, and it might mean that we're separate for a while, but Dad's coming back, you know? Yeah. So I think that's important.
I think that's really important what you said, that remember that there's work and that we have a calling and that God created the human race with a job to do, with work to do.
Yeah.
And even a toddler can learn to respect his caregivers, his mother's time, and realize, I don't have time to do that right now. I'm cooking a dinner for my family. That's actually a part of him growing up and maturing, an emotional maturity, that he doesn't have to be the center of attention all the time, including of your attention. And to learn to wait, those are all really essential lessons that I think the earlier kids begin to be introduced to that idea, the sooner they can grow up in those areas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the crazy thing is, some of what seems to be being absorbed right now is your baby, your toddler, your preschooler needs your constant presence and attention.
Yeah.
But then by 18, you're a helicopter parent if you give them hardly any attention or pay attention to their Instagram account or supervise them in other ways. Yeah. It's like, oh gosh, those are two extremes that are unhealthy.
What's the new phrase? It was helicopter parent that was a phrase that came out, I think, in your generation. Mm-hmm. And now I'll have to look it up. Now it's the bulldozer parent.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think maybe let me fact check that.
Yeah, let me just say there's something, a new phrase, though, to your point, because what I'm picking up, which is interesting, is, you know, Elizabeth, you were highlighting attachment, which is really important.
Really
Phil, you were talking about the different dynamics biblically about the withness, bringing with. And then Diane, you're even talking about that similar idea. And the one thing that's really interesting, though, is that with a toddler, we still do this with our kids right now, which is interesting. Of the like PCIT play therapy is a really interesting that they tell you that takes 5 minutes. That's that idea that you're literally sitting down, you're doing an activity with your child. It's just their, it's an activity they want to do, and you're not asking questions. You're just literally reflecting back what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they say to do that in 5 minute increments.
Yeah.
So if you think about that,
yeah.
It's not about the quantity of time. It's really about the quality of how you're spending your time, and you're actually focusing on them specifically and making them feel what we would call seen or felt like mom and dad are really attached to me in a deep way. So when it comes to this particular topic, even with a toddler, I would say maybe even strategically have a couple of play sessions, have one or two.
Yeah.
Just they don't even have to be like 5-10 minutes. Everybody can give that.
Uh-huh.
And then for the other times, be like, hey, buddy, we're going to be doing our little playtime later, but right now I got to do this.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying that is because we have found, we underestimated that tool.
Mm-hmm.
Really, actually, we're skeptical. Like, there is no way this is going to be effective. 5 minutes? What are you talking about? And it is the weirdest, most magical, most connecting thing.
Yeah.
And when your kids are thirsty for it, as our friend said, they will soak it up. And a lot of that comes more to your, when you're present with them, you can be not present. So we all know that ability where we're with our kids, but we're not with them and they feel that.
Yes.
So if you can change some of the, like the felt presence, I think that's a big part. That leads into the second one. And I'm forcing us to go to the next one because
we'll
if not, we can spend all of our time on one. The second idea is, I'm imagining this as a mom, but overstimulation from kids, whining noises, totally understandable. And being overstimulated all day with littles and then trying to connect physically, I'm imagining physical intimacy with your spouse. So overstimulation and then needing to connect with your spouse. And I think overstimulation is a big deal. Like I'm thinking about, I get overstimulated easily, but I remember the first time when you're like, I'm just being touched all day long. I don't want to be touched by you. And I'm like, I was like, I don't want to get rid of our kids, but like, what's going on?
I think that's anytime I was nursing.
Yeah. It was just like nursing, the constant touch. But I think it's important for parents to be seen for a minute. Cause I think a lot of parents, the internal struggle is you feel overwhelmed. You're trying to balance the demands of parenting.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking of a mom, right? Or as an example, but dads too. Parenting, work, personal faith. You're feeling exhausted. You're feeling drained. You're often lonely. How many moms are lonely?
So lonely?
Even dads are feeling lonely as they navigate those life challenges. You're worrying. You're constantly wondering, am I doing this right? Am I doing a good enough job? I don't want to unintentionally harm my child's future. So you're constantly worrying. You have self-doubt. You're questioning, am what I am doing actually right? Is that actually helpful? And then there's fear. Like, what if this doesn't turn out well? Mm-hmm. I think to say all that is just to say, the overstimulated question is a very fair one. And I think it plays to a lot of those internal fears or those internal struggles that we all have. And so when it comes to things like you're overstimulated, but physical intimacy, I think it's, those are the surface, that's where it shows up. But I think it's often deeper than just over, I mean, of course it is practical. It's a surface thing. But I think I just wanted to highlight that to say, we see you. You know, parents that are listening right now, we know how that feels.
Yeah.
And we've had to work through that. And I think it just comes down to more communication for us. It's been more communication. It's also been like, okay, well, I need to, what is it that you need to reset? What is it that you need? Often it's usually a break from the thing that is physically touching all the time. So it'd be putting the kids down, letting her have a bath, making sure the house is clean, like these things that were helpful to her. And I mean, that was our situation.
Yeah, that helped my nervous system.
In those situations. Yeah. But yeah, other thoughts. I just wanted to highlight, like, it's deep.
I think, and it's just normal. I think part of it kids are overwhelming. Toddlers are overwhelming. I mean, babies are, I really love the infant and baby stage. That kind of touch was good. But the nursing all the time does feel like somebody's demanding something from your body constantly. And you're tired.
Really? Yeah.
So like what you said, I think is key, Brooke. I mean, I think that's when I started taking a bath every night. I needed to have a transition between being mommy and all the demands and then being wife and lover. Mm. Those just felt too far apart.
Sure.
So having that buffer zone where I took care of myself and had all the luxury associated with that, not once a week, but on a regular daily basis, there was a time for me to separate. Phil mostly put the kids to bed. When he was home, he mostly put the kids to bed at that point. Because in our case, I'd been with him all day long and he'd been away from them all day long. I know it's different in a lot of homes now where dad is working from home, mom is working from home, you're tag teaming.
Mm-hmm.
But find out your way to give each other kind of that buffer, I think is really important. And to be able to, you know, a different metaphor, take off the mommy hat and put on the, I fell in love with this man. He's my friend. He's my lover. He's my husband. He has needs too. I have needs too. Because you need both.
Mm.
You need both. You need to have that affection and friendship between you and to keep it alive and going, not just on date night, but on a daily basis.
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to Legacy Builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give. She's talking
wherever
about that
possible.
Handsome guy right over there.
You know, I'm thinking of when you started.
You just ignore what I said.
I'm not going to respond to that. Nobody ever says to her, gosh, how did you get him? Never. It's always like, your wife is so beautiful.
Nobody's
like, how did you get her?
Oh, trust me. That's my life, too.
And I just say, if God blesses you, say thank you. But the bath that, and I remember when we lived in Santa Cruz in Aptos.
Yeah.
And you know, we were so thrilled to have this house we bought new. It wasn't huge.
Yeah.
And the master bedroom didn't have a bathtub.
Right.
It had a shower.
Yeah.
So now you've got this gorgeous bathtub. You know, you always see in the movies, somebody's taking a bath in this gorgeous bathtub.
Oh, I have one of those now.
Yeah, you have one now, but you didn't then. You went into the hall bath.
Yeah.
Which is the one the three kids, Matthew wasn't born. The three kids just probably like rubber ducky toys around and stuff. But you took a bubble bath in there. And so I guess I just wanted to say, you don't have to have a dream house.
No.
You don't have to have a, what is it? Pinterest, whatever.
Pinterest worthy.
Pinterest worthy bathtub.
And yet, honestly, your physical space is important. So to do what you can to create a niche of beauty.
That's what I said. You did what you never complained. Like, I need this. I need, you went in there and you turned it into a place of relaxation and beauty. And so I just wanted to point that out to you, that you made that happen when you didn't have your own bathtub. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it now with a gorgeous bathtub. So
I think what I hear everybody's saying is, well, two things that you have to be able to communicate about it with your spouse. And I think for the, you know, we're assuming it's a mom asking this question. Mm-hmm. But I would say for the husbands listening, or maybe if your wife is passing along what we talked about.
Tell me, please listen to this.
Yeah. You need to have a curiosity of what that feels like. Maybe take yourself back to, maybe if you work a Monday through Friday job, take yourself back to what you feel by Sunday night after spending the weekend home all day long. And I think this is where it's good if in the scenario, I think that's maybe being described in this question is it sounds like the mom is home during the day with the kids. So if that's your reality, it's good sometimes for you to step away, have a night or two somewhere else, and for your husband to be able to do the day to day. I think it's a really good, not all the time, but sometimes it's really good for the dads to experience what that feels like so that when the wife is communicating, this is what's happening, they actually can make a connection to what that feels like. Yeah. And so you have to be able to talk about it on both sides. Yep. And then what I hear everybody saying is there has to be a step in between the overstimulation and the being able to connect with your spouse in that way. You can't expect yourself to be able to just make that switch in an instant and be mad at yourself that you can't. And you know, for you and I, oftentimes it's a bath. For other people, it might be going on a run.
She's saying her and her mom, not her and I.
So yes. No, maybe mom and I.
For those
mom
listening. And I. I was like sitting there going like, this might be translated differently if you're not seeing the hand cue that she's giving her mom.
Yes.
Separate baths, different places. They reset with the bath. Yes. We just want to be super clear.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. But it's going to be different for everybody. It could be reading a book. It could be going on a walk outside. It could be going to the gym. It could whatever it is, something that is possible to do on a very consistent basis. Yeah. And obviously that's not going to be crazy time consuming. It's not going to be expensive. Yeah. But just something built into the natural rhythm of your life is helpful.
So what I'm hearing is come up with a plan together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And agree to a plan together, and it's going to require thoughtfulness on both and unselfishness and actually caring about the well-being of the other on both your parts. And if, you know, there's a lot of scenarios where women and men, moms and dads are working full time and they're having to juggle things together, and that's going to take a great deal of consideration of each other's needs instead of demanding that your needs are met, which is... When we get desperate, we all do the demanding thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly, right, Phil? He's kind of chuckling over there.
What maturity for you to not say anything. Yeah, good job. Yes. I'm just proud of your maturity.
But ideally, you're stepping in there voluntarily seeing the exhaustion that these years brings. I mean, it is a physically and emotionally and socially, even spiritually stressful time. Of any parent's lives, but what can happen in the life of a mother or a father who really gives themselves to this time and endures how difficult it is, is this great leap forward in maturity. Mm-hmm. And in cases where I see the parents not parenting, you know, having their child completely parented by outside sources, and they skip the pressures of these time, they're really slow in maturing in these areas of tolerance, of just being able to, I can handle this. I can handle this overstimulation. It's almost like your nervous system gets a workout during those years and you never go back to the pre-children kind of short-tempered, short tolerance.
It's like your central nervous system runs a marathon, and it like trains for a marathon
every day.
And all of a sudden, you realize how strong you really are.
Yeah.
And so, don't bypass these years. Mm. They're absolutely essential for your development as a human being.
Oh, I find when you have kids and there's extreme, you know, swings at home in this arena, public is easy. Like people freaking out on planes, you're like, I don't care. Like, I don't have to do it. Kids freaking out on planes. I mean, I sat next to somebody recently who was just livid at the fact that this kid was having a hard time. And I was surprised because this person was far beyond their years of far older than me and should have known better, but just could not believe how displaced this person was by this kid. And this kid was not even really that bad. Not even crying that much.
You're like, you ain't
and just trying to relate to me, like hit me on the shoulder, like, can you believe this? And I'm just like, just trying to.
You
like,
know what's crazy is how many of them are old.
I know.
And they had kids who did all that.
Well, I guess that's
a perfect segue into the thought I was having, though, of how important this is in our time because of what we're seeing happening with kids, the rise of anxiety and neurodiversity. And when you have a kid who has anxiety or is neurodiverse in any way, which usually they have anxiety, oftentimes those go hand in hand.
Sure, it's scary to, when your brain's not keeping up in that way, it's really scary. Yes.
Mm-hmm. But those kids become dysregulated so much faster than kids who don't struggle with that. And so we are living in with easily overstimulated kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're living inside way more than we ever used to, which outside is so calming that, you know, we're with our kids a lot more.
Yeah.
So this is such an important thing for our time because our kids are experiencing different things than even I did growing up.
Yes.
And we're going to be swimming in this a lot more. Yeah. So I think even some of the like grumpy older people where you're like, wait, you had kids too.
Yeah.
It's funny how they
experienced it differently.
Okay. And that's where I think this stage of our life of, you know, as people get older, they retire. So they're no longer juggling work.
You don't have that tension. Yeah.
Life is, they work really hard to make life easy and good.
Yeah.
This is obviously a first world problem.
Yeah.
And they surround themselves with people who believe the same as they do, dress the same as they do, vote the same as they do, and become almost like middle schoolers again. This very
super
judgmental, critical.
Yeah. You're right.
You know, like the woman on the plane.
Mean. No, it was mean. A man. Yes. And what mean. I was what I was referring to is like once you have that experience at home, to your point of the training, the exercise of your central nervous system, it is so true that you can handle things will undo a lot of people in maybe a public type space. And you're just like, I couldn't care less because at least it's not my thing. Like I know how bad it could be. And
child on my lap.
Yeah,
right
now. That's always what I feel. I feel for that parent putting my headphones.
You'll get people to say like, oh, that's so kind. You're just such a thoughtful person. Or, you know, or like you're so regulated. You're like, you have no idea. Like I'm just not, I just have no pressures right now. Like
that's right.
Put all the wrong pressures on me. I'll crack.
Yeah.
I think this leads to our next question, but the segue should be a fun story from our family text chain. We have a family text chain. Matthew and Simo have a wonderful little boy, Solomon. He's a year now, year and a couple months.
He's 15 months.
Such a handsome little guy. And we get a photo the other night, the whole family, of Sully standing in the toilet. He had crawled into the toilet.
Oh, God. Huge smile on his face.
This is the text Matthew said. He goes, how come intentional parenting has never addressed this issue?
In the film series,
you never addressed this issue in the film series? What am I supposed to do with this?
When your toddler stands in the toilet.
I love it because there's like Matt took a photo and there's a mirror and Simo's reflections in the mirror and her hands are just like covering on her face. Like, as I would be too, like that's a toilet. Like, oh my gosh.
He's grinning away like he's in a swimming pool.
It was just a great reminder. Like that is a perfect picture of a lot of our lives. And that was just, you know, whatever, Monday evening, right? So anyway, that was a fun story. But let's end on this one. But I think a very important one is, you know, not being able to shield our children from emotional pain. And this is a big one because this weighs on so many people. So I just, again, want to acknowledge the internal pain. Yeah. This comes down to that worry piece of like, what if my kids get hurt beyond repair? What if they don't turn out right? What if I hurt them? And I think I think the truth is, just to say it frankly, you are going to wound your kids. You're going to hurt them in some way.
Yes.
It's going to happen. That's why we talk so much about repair, as Elizabeth started with this whole idea. And there's a lot of tools out there on that, but that is such a huge part of our story, because there's no way that I think you cannot wound your kids in a certain way. And so shielding your kids from emotional pain, I don't even think is even the full goal. Now, of course, you need to shield your kids to a certain amount, but I also think the bigger goal is teaching your kids how to identify what that emotional pain is and how to process it and work through it. Mm-hmm. I remember a person said a while ago that one of our greatest jobs as parents is to actually name what our children are experiencing, so it's our job to help our kids make sense of the world.
Yeah.
And so we have a job to explain to our kids what's happening for them. And half the time it's explaining our kids to themselves, but then it's also like explaining how elementary does this come when our kids are little. Mommy and daddy had an argument. You saw that we were frustrated with each other and we worked it out and we apologized. Like, we still do this with our kids to this day. It's something you, Phil and Diane did with your kids, and we've taken on. And our kids, to this point, it's ad nauseum, you know, for them. They know it so well. They're just like, I know, you guys apologize. You worked it out great. You know, they're quick to just be like, we know the thing. But I think it's our job. That's just one example of many, to name and to identify what's going on in their life, in the world, to make sense of it for them. Because that actually is one way that you mitigate against catastrophic emotional pain that they can't process or understand.
Yeah. And I think what Elizabeth was talking about, attachment, weighs in here. Mm-hmm. Because our goal is, we want them to attach to us, of course, but our goal is that they would attach to the Father and that they would take those four S's, that they would feel seen by God and soothed. And soothing is in times of trauma, in times of pain, whether we inflicted the pain by a harsh word or neglected some sort, got involved on our phone when they needed our attention, whatever it is. We soothe them. And by doing that, if we could create a perfect world, why do they need to turn to the Father for shelter? You know, I love that he's often in the Old Testament, especially in the Psalms, calls himself a shelter. And David called him his shelter, because David was a leader of a nation and he was being lambasted and people were being disloyal to him and hard things were happening. So he ran into God as his shelter. So those painful times are where our kids, we soothe them the way God soothes. So we teach them that the Holy Spirit is the one to go to for comfort. And they feel it in real time. Mm-hmm. You know, Matthew, at 8 years old, came down with type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it really shook our world like a major earthquake. And a chronic, very dangerous disease that would follow him for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. He would never be able to go back to being carefree about his body again. Mm. One misstep could send him to the hospital. Mm. And for the rest of his life, and I just wore that so painfully. And you know, Matthew was the youngest of four. The day he was born, the three of you kids, Mark and Rebecca and Elizabeth, were standing right outside the door in the hallway. And then as soon as, you know, the nurses opened the door, you guys burst in there. Just, you know, he was just laying on my chest. That's the world he was born into, of these people who were, these five people who were delighted with everything about him and every step he took, every little toy he played with, constant delight in him. And then he gets diabetes, and I'm crying out to God saying, why? How come? You know, like every parent, those are honest questions. Mm-hmm. You could have stopped this, God. Why did this happen? And having this firm sense of the Father, I was in the hospital, was hooked up to IVs, was in the hospital, and having this firm sense of God saying, trust me. Not that he caused it, not that it was for some good thing. Trust me, I'm going to bring something about out of this. And then years later, realizing how easily we could have just turned him into an entitled, spoiled, attention-seeking kid without even meaning to, because we loved him so much. And I feel like the diabetes gave him like a rod in his back. It made him resilient and strong and able to endure instead of needing to be coddled. You know, he's a very strong person in the best sense of the word. So I wish he never had diabetes. I wish he still didn't have diabetes and some of the effects that keep on in your body as you age with it. He's had it like 25 years now. What is it? Something like that.
He got it when he was 8. He's 32, almost 33. Yeah.
So I wish I could have shielded him from the suffering of that, but I couldn't. And I think God wants to work those things into his life to make him a man of God. Mm. I know a couple that I went to school with last year, almost a year ago now, on his 5th birthday, he was admitted to the hospital with leukemia. And it's been a battle for his life in and out of the hospital all year. And it just, you know, I follow them and support them, prayer. And I think, okay, what is God going to do in this whole family's life who are, you know, a ministry family who want to serve Jesus and now they're just trying to survive. Keep their child alive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, of course, they want to shield him for that, you know. Mm-hmm. They want him to live. Mm-hmm. But what is God going to do in the midst of it? I think a parent has to have a certain amount of trust in God that he will use the hard things. Divorce happens in families that don't want divorce. Mm. Other tragedies happen, and you wish you could shield your kids from it.
Yeah.
And God wishes that you would trust him.
Yeah.
Makes me think of the story of Joseph, you know, where all of it was stuff done to him at the hands of others. And then you see this incredible story play out, and he says, what you meant for evil, God meant for good and to save many lives. Yes. And you see in this story how God used it for incredible good in Joseph's own life and humility and all of that, but then to literally save a nation.
Yeah. And it was just family. So this is family trauma.
Family trauma.
Yeah.
I love what you said about naming for our kids instead of just, I think their propensity is to protect. And so we avoid acknowledging the hard thing, but there really is power in saying, I know this is really hard. Sorry. I know that, you know, I think the person that asked this question also asked it in the context of a really broken marriage. Like finding a way to be able to name that appropriately so that the kid understands, oh, what I'm seeing and experiencing, there is something here.
It like really is hard, yes.
But I also was thinking of... you know, over kind of the course of two episodes, Sally shared much of her story. And I know, Brooke, you talk a lot about how much her story is so hopeful to you. So to anybody who's like maybe really resonating with this question, maybe go back and listen to those, because when you hear the harm that was done to her and then her response to that pain and some things she did to cause more pain, but it was all out of this horrific thing that happened to her. And then you see what God
has done.
Yeah. And she very self-admittedly says, I didn't know any of this stuff when I was raising my kids. I didn't come to the Lord till my 30s, you know, already had all of my kids. Yeah. And to see how God is using all of that horrible stuff that happened to her.
Yes.
To and save many lives. To help so
she's
many.
Become this healer.
Yes. And if you're actually with her, you feel the healing power of the Holy Spirit by what God has done in her, not because she's like, I'm going to use this for good. Yeah. And so I'm going to.
Yeah. We don't need any more rah-rah people.
No. And please. I just think we need people sharing those stories to give us hope.
Yeah.
Whether it's a mild, I over-respond to my kids too often, or there's legitimate harm that you have no control over.
Yeah.
To hear the stories of, but God.
Yeah.
And to increase our trust in what he can do completely outside of what we can or can't do, what we can't protect them from, what we don't have the ability to provide for them.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Final thoughts, Phil?
Final thought, I'd like to read a few verses from a psalm because, you know, the story of Joseph is powerful. He's a type of Christ. He's a picture of Christ.
Yeah.
You know, he was taken away from his family, but the phrase that's all through that story, but the Lord was with Joseph.
Yes.
He's in prison, but the Lord was with
Joseph.
So I think, you know, you can't shield your kids from emotional pain, but you want to teach them to run to God in the pain. Mm-hmm. And so then we have to ask ourselves as parents, where do I go when I'm emotionally hurt, when somebody criticizes me? Do I lash out or do I go to something to run from it, or do I go to God? And I think that, you know, that that's God has a perspective we do not have. He's outside of time, and he's molding us. His purpose, Romans 8, is to mold us into the image of his son. And we all know that that happens more in hard things. It doesn't happen in prosperity. It happens in adversity. Yeah. And that's where we become strong. And we need to teach our kids the same, because one day we're going to launch them out into the world. So we want to teach them when they get hurt. Yes, that was horrible. What they said to you, that must have felt awful. Mm-hmm. But let's go to Jesus, because he knows what that feels like.
Yeah.
Because he was also insulted and literally killed, but he never reviled back. And so I think we teach our kids. Anyway, Psalm 91, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. So faith has to come in. You got to teach your kids to walk by faith. I will say to the Lord, you're my refuge, you're my fortress. He's the one who delivers you from the snare of the trapper, from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions. Under his wings, you may seek refuge because his faithfulness is a shield. Mm-hmm. How do I shield my kids? His faithfulness is a shield and a bulwark. And it goes on and on, how we don't have to fear because we can dwell in the shadow of the Almighty. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what it is for me. I'm still doing that in my 70s when I'm hurt, when somebody offends me or hurts me, or, you know, I'm still learning to run to the Lord for comfort. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great way to end it. Wherever you're at with any of these questions, process them, write them down. And thank you for sending in these questions. We'll keep addressing, as we do every couple episodes, all the different various questions that come in. But thanks for following along and covering these for today.